Good morning. I'm going to read from Matthew 25 and 22, and those are on pages 39 and page 33, respectively, in your pew Bible. I'm going to be reading from the New Revised Standard Version, so it will be slightly different than what you're reading in the Bible, the pew Bible. Matthew 25, 34 to 40. Then the king will say to those at his right hand, "Come, you that are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me." Then the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? And when was it that we saw you a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? And when was it that we saw you sick or in prison and visited you?" And the king will answer them, "Truly, I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me." Matthew 22:15-21. Then the Pharisees went and plotted to entrap him in what he said. So they sent their disciples to him along with the Herodians, saying, "Teacher, we know that you are sincere and teach the way of God in accordance with truth and show deference to no one, for you do not regard people with partiality. Tell us then what you think. Is it lawful to pay taxes to the emperor or not?" But Jesus, aware of their malice, said, "Why are you putting me to the test, you hypocrites? Show me the coin used for the tax." And they brought him a denarius. Then he said to them, "Whose head is this and whose title?" They answered, "The emperor's." Then he said to them, "Give therefore to the emperor the things that are the emperor's, and to God the things that are God's." And the kids can go downstairs if they like. So in June of this year, like all of you, I saw the images of the tent city prisons built for children, separated from their parents. And all I could think about was the concentration camp where my mother's family lived for several years during World War II. Gila River, it was in the Gila River Indian Reservation in Arizona. after that time, the Japanese-American community has really made a point of standing in solidarity with those targeted by the U.S. government, including the Muslim community after 9/11. And because almost no one, except for the American Friends Service Committee, stood for my family and their community when they were forced out of their homes simply because of their ethnicity, I feel part of this solidarity movement to prevent individuals who've been targeted by the government from being so alone and so isolated. So I felt to do more than just organize locally in the East Bay. I wanted to go in person to witness what is happening at the Texas-Mexico border, or more accurately, the Texas-Nuevo León border. It's a state of Mexico closest to South Texas. Going in person felt like one way to embody this commitment. I came away from this experience with these three questions. Who is a stranger? Who is a deserving migrant? And whose perspective informs our values? So, to the first question, who is a stranger? I think my concern for migrants is grounded in this passage from Matthew 25. This passage also inspired a national Matthew 25 pledge movement of faith communities to act on behalf of immigrants, black and brown people suffering from racial policing, and Muslims who have their religious and personal liberty at risk. I think the unspoken assumption here is that the stranger is the other, someone outside of my group or our group. Our perspective is from our geography, our church, our friends, and our family looking outward. And with this perspective comes privilege. And when I say privilege, I mean someone like myself who has her basic needs met, housing, food, taken care of, and someone who can easily access the work, legal, civic, education, and civic systems when others cannot. Privilege allows me to talk about others as those in need of help. And even an emphatic and well-intentioned expression of concern for others is a mark of privilege and social power. I took a course this summer from Church World Service about anti-racist practices, and they reminded us how important it is as a privileged person not to assume that we can or should solve others' problems, especially in working with people migrating to the U.S. So with this little bit of preparation and following the leading I felt, I left my East Bay bubble and landed in McAllen, Texas in early October. So on the left is a, you can kind of see the red dot, which is where I was, and this is the very, very bottom of Texas down here. This is actually Brownsville, but it's the very tip of Texas. And up here you can see San Antonio, Austin, Houston. So those are the metro areas. But it's the southernmost part of Texas. And then on the right side, you can see a close-up of where I was, not far from the Gulf of Mexico and a little bit northwest of Brownsville. El Paso is farther, El Paso is up here. It's farther northwest. It's about a 10-hour drive from where I was. So I soon realized that in South Texas, I was the stranger. I didn't know anyone there. And I'd only talked to two people before I arrived. In the first couple of days, I asked myself, what the heck am I doing here? I mean, it helped that I was following a leading and not simply a personal impulse. So I just kept reminding myself that my job was to listen, to learn, and pay attention to everything I experienced. And in retrospect, I wondered whether God wanted me to arrive somewhere as a stranger. You thought you were going to Texas to help arriving strangers. Surprise! I have something else in store for you. It was a humbling experience. I was well aware that many Texans distrust people from California and particularly from San Francisco. So I started introducing myself as someone from California rather than the Bay Area to try to seem less foreign. If you can't read it, it says, "Welcome to Texas, drive friendly the Texas way." So I found this sign just north of the border crossing in Hidalgo, Texas, near McAllen. It turns out that Texas Friendly is a real thing, for those of you who aren't from Texas. I lost count of the people I encountered who were really genuinely friendly and kind to me. Texas is definitely the friendliest place I have ever visited in the U.S. The people I met there really lived up to Matthew 25:35. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. So, the second question, who is a deserving migrant? This is an image by Fabiana Rodriguez, who's an artist in Oakland, and she's also the executive director of Culture Strike. And you can buy her t-shirt, but I thought it was a beautiful image. So before my visit, I had no idea that South Texas was on a central migratory path for butterflies. The National Butterfly Center is located in Mission, Texas, a few miles from McAllen. It happens that the next section of border wall will be constructed across part of the National Butterfly Center's land as soon as February. So this spot is it's a levee, so there's water running through it, and there's a wall, there's sort of a levee. It goes down on in the foreground, and then on the other side it kind of goes down because holding the water in. And this is a levee border wall, so this is going to be right in the middle of that spot. That's the plan. Something that looks just like that. The executive director of this center has been one of the most outspoken opponents of the border wall. As you can imagine, it's going to disrupt their land and also they had been restoring land for to attract butterflies. So it will be a challenge for them. So the Butterfly Center map shows the path of the butterflies from Central America up through South Texas. The monarchs start arriving in October, and as you can see, I took that picture, they're already arriving. And their migration is celebrated every November at the Butterfly Festival. South Texas is also the central flyway for birds migrating to and from South America, which I didn't know either. When they come north, the birds cross the Gulf of Mexico and stop to rest in South Texas. There are birding sites literally all over the Rio Grande Valley. And the bird migration is celebrated in November with a festival in Harlingen, which is down the road from McAllen. And then there are the snowbirds. At the Donna United Methodist Church they attended for 2 weeks, the snowbirds were returning to reunite with their friends. They generally travel south from the upper Midwest and other northern states starting in October. And it happens that the area, as I drove around, I noticed that the area is dotted with mobile home parks for retired people, many of whom are seasonal residents, and they have signs that say, "Welcome back." So South Texas is clearly a crossroads for migration, butterflies, birds, and people. The butterflies and birds from the north and south are welcome, and people from the north are very welcome. But the migrants from the south are not. So this is a map of the path of the migrant caravan in November from the San Jose Mercury News. They ended up, although Brownsville would have been closer, they chose a longer route to Tijuana because it was safer. Joseph and Mary took Jesus and fled to Egypt to escape King Herod. And this is one map of that route. And although some argue that Jesus was not a migrant, his path doesn't seem that much different than those I've just shown. So the third question is, whose perspective informs our values? These verses from Matthew 22 kept coming to me while I was in Texas. And as we read about the Pharisees attempting to trap Jesus in an either-or statement about ruling power, It provides a starting point to consider what we owe God and how we are called to deal with secular governments. So as part of my work for the Texas Civil Rights Project, where I was volunteering, I mapped the new proposed sections of the border wall in Hidalgo County, where the office was located and where I was staying. And I created an interactive online map. And as part of that, I read about the damage to the natural environment, to people and communities, and wildlife along existing sections of the wall in the southern U.S. And I kept weighing this against what I felt I needed to do. Since I'd committed to listening and learning and trying not to impose my privilege and perspective on people, I started noticing the different worldviews coming to play at the border. I could clearly see the legal perspective. People need to follow the law. The political perspective. We need to control the border. The faith perspective. Welcome the stranger. The local resident perspective. I don't want people running drugs across my farm. The migrant perspective. We need to escape the violence. These all make sense within their own worldview, and I doubt there is any way to successfully reconcile all of them at once. I spent an afternoon with a farmer, local farmer, touring fields, irrigation canals, pumping stations, and the Rio Grande, and the border wall. He took me to that spot where I took the picture of the border wall. Perhaps the only thing we had in common was the fact that we were Christians. And both of us knew this. But my assignment was to listen and learn. And I found it's really, really hard to otherize someone who's kind to you and sitting next to you in the car, taking you around on a long tour. And I was surprised to find that he thought the border wall was a terrible waste of money. I guess I shouldn't have been surprised, because as someone who grew up there, he had a very nuanced view of the border issues. It made me see why so many memorable stories in the Bible recount transformative one-on-one encounters that allow people to step out of their everyday perspective. The Good Samaritan, Jesus meeting the Samaritan woman at the well, or even Jesus washing his disciples' feet to provide an unexpected example of what he wanted them to do. We spend our time in our own bubbles within the East Bay bubble. That's easy to do because that's the default. On my last full day in Texas, I volunteered at the Catholic Charities of the Rio Grande Valley Humanitarian Respite Center. It's on a quiet street in downtown McAllen. The center helps families organize themselves before leaving for other parts of the country to reunite with their family. They offer clothes, food, diapers, and a black plastic bag snack bag for the long bus ride ahead. It's a good thing I'd been warned it was chaotic. I stepped into the main room. This is a photo from an earlier site they had. It's a different one than I visited, but it's from their website. The room was dark and crowded and noisy. It was about the size of a very small DMV waiting room, and it had those rows and rows and rows of chairs. Must have been at least 100 people, including children. People trying to get information from staff, people lining up for clothing, people preparing to head into the dining room, people lobbying for showers. They hadn't been able to open the shower area in 4 days. I noticed the young mothers with babies and children in tow. They were so very young, in their 20s and 30s. They were there only with the clothes they had on them, and they were so much more poised than I would have been in their situation. As I was helping package diapers into Ziploc bags and sort children's clothes, I just started to cry. I didn't feel sad, and I wasn't thinking about anything particular, but I think it was just being in the presence of so many traumatized people and feeling their emotional state the way that all humans and all animals do. So I remind us, all of us, that the stakes are not small. If you recall, the section of Matthew 25 is entitled Judgment of the Nations. Matthew 25, 45 to 46 continues, "Then he will answer them, 'Truly I tell you, just as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me.' And these will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life." So I close with these questions. How often have we been the stranger? Or you could say, how often have we left our privilege behind? How do we determine who is deserving versus undeserving of help? And how often have we traversed a barrier to connect to someone outside our comfortable circle?